Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn from a study from Ohio State University how you don't need much exercise to lower your heart disease risk, especially if you're overweight, published in the journal PLOS ONE. We have about 12 important scientific stories on how to live a longer life and prevent disease. But today, I'm going to address several other issues. Over the weekend, I was sent a short news clip from one of our listeners concerning the pushback by local citizens in a very small community, about 2,000 people. It didn't say whether the community was California, Washington, or Seattle, or in Oregon, one of those. And it's just a small rural community, and they don't want 5G. So a reporter for the local station went out there and spoke with them, and they said because there's, you know, concern about cancer, and the tower was going right beside a school, the only school in the whole area that everyone went to. And so she did the right thing. As a journalist, she went to the American Cancer Society, and she went to the World Health Organization, and she got the official version that there was nothing to fear about 5G. In fact, to the contrary, it would make everything much better. And that's the story she told. I'm going to show you this, and you can watch this by going to prn.fm, but then I'm going to respond to it. My hope is that someone in this audience will send her my comments, the substantial amount of research material we are putting on the program, including all of the articles I've written on 5G, and all the expert testimony that she says doesn't exist. And hence we need more studies. I'm sure that she was well-intentioned, but there's the danger of virtually all the media talking about an issue as important as 5G, the radiation of all things, the electromagnetic frequency of all things through all insects, all humans, all life on the planet, as if she's doing us a favor by going to the authorities, when it's the authorities were the problem. So we're going to challenge that. Also, of course, everyone knows that there's rioting and there's protesting and that there are agent provocateurs. But I have my own views on this, and I'll share them and offer an opportunity if you call in and share your views. So we're going to talk about that. And also, I'm going to have Dr. Martin Paul, who went on the record to the National Institute of Health about the danger, the insanity of 5G. Plus a veteran MD drops a bombshell about 5G technology dangers at a 5G hearing. Now, I'm not going to play all of this because it's rather long testimony. However, I would like someone to go to our website, prn.fm, download my articles on 5G, download all of our videos on 5G, by these expert witnesses before congressional hearings, state hearings, and send them to this reporter and ask her, would she now do the more balanced and objective journalism? Hopefully she will. Let's begin with the latest on health. And by the way, I forgot. I have a little comment about the people who are scrambling to make the COVID virus vaccine. That New York State now has just, the New York State Bar, quote, the health section issued a report yesterday urging the state of New York to make COVID-19 vaccines mandatory for all New Yorkers, allowing no religious or other personal belief exemptions. Now, that's almost always the case when the New York State Bar Association, when they issued suggestions, those suggestions are taken. It's an 84-page report, and it asserts, quote, for the sake of public health, mandatory vaccinations for COVID-19 should be required to the United States as soon as it is available, end quote. Well, how ill-conceived are these recommendations on a hypothetical existence of the COVID vaccine's capacity to protect us? So over the next week, each day, I'll be giving you a update on deconstructing the myth of the public statements to us about the COVID virus. Is it real? Yes. Is it dangerous? Absolutely. Is it a pandemic? No. Should we have been quarantined? No. Should everybody get a test? Well, which test are you referring to? Oh, that's right. They don't have the proper test. Tomorrow, 35 minutes, I'm going to share with you about the tests that they're wanting you to take or have given you are not accurate. There's no gold standard. You could have the virus and it will show you're negative. You could not have the virus and it could show you're positive. That'll be tomorrow. So we're going just to deconstruct this. That's what we do so that you can see the truth, because you're not going to get it from the New York Times or CNN or these other media, which are substantially biased. But just so let's be very clear. Everyone listening now from New York, you will receive the vaccine. You'll be mandated to receive the vaccine. There'll probably be some very stiff penalties, possibly prison, or not allowed to leave your home. In Oregon, they've already started the process of having employees of the state that will monitor you so you can't go out of your house. You want to go out, they'll go for you. You want food, they'll go buy you some food. Medicine, same way. You will literally be a prisoner in your own house. That's what's coming. That's called fascism. But evidently, the average person doesn't seem to care about anything. You will. We're protesting now, but for a completely different reason. But what's going to happen when the average person is forced to take a vaccine and then 3 weeks, 3 months, 6 months later ends up in a hospital, sick or dying from the vaccine? And yet the manufacturers have already been identified. You can't sue them. What's going to happen? Well, the company most likely or highly likely to be the one getting that contract from the government is Merck. What do you know about them? What does anyone, I challenge anyone in this audience, lawyers, engineers, doctors, tell me what you know about Merck. How about nothing? Zero. Zip. You will today. Everyone's going to know about Merck today because we did the scholarship to bring you the truth about this company and why they shouldn't be allowed to do anything except go out of business and go to jail for the rest of their lives. We're going to share the truth about Merck with you today. And they're the ones most likely to give you this mandated vaccine in New York. But hey, maybe this is what it takes for those who thought, yeah, when did I ever get involved in anything? Everyone's got an opinion, but who's out demonstrating about this? You're going to get your vaccine. You're not going to like it. Are you going to go to the streets? You're going to protest? No. You're not enough pain for that. More to come in a moment. But we always start with something we can all agree upon. Let's stay healthy wherever possible. A new study suggests for obese or overweight adults, that's two-thirds of the American adult population, that any amount of exercise might lower the risk of developing cardiovascular disease in the next 10 years. This was published just recently, last week, in the journal PLOS ONE, found that exercise of any volume can lower the risk of by as much as half among obese or overweight adults. So that's a big deal. In fact, people whose weight fell into the normal range, having a body mass index between 18 and 24.9%, who completed at least 150 minutes of exercise a week, that's not very much, had lower risk of cardiovascular disease. So this shows that increasing physical activity, even in small amounts, as little as 10 minutes at a time, is associated with a lower risk of heart attacks or strokes. Now, I suggest you do 1 hour, not 150, but like 500 minutes a week, then you really start getting yourself into shape. This is from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, a survey conducted by the U.S. CDC, though I don't trust their figures. But overall, all other studies from all other groups have shown that at that 150-minute mark, which the American Heart Association and the American College of Sports Medicine and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services all advise adults to get at least, and again, that's the bottom end of minimum, 150 minutes. I suggest a minimum of 500 minutes a week. And then watch your heart. By the way, it was 14 years ago that I worked with a group of people, not based upon age, but based upon all kinds of problems, and to see would a lifestyle change help them. And I found that if you didn't change your behavior, you couldn't really change your disease. And I just finished where we had a clinical study. There's one person still in it on campus, but the rest are still in it at home, coming off of, they're finishing up over the next couple weeks. And the single most important thing was not the diet, exercise, supplement, stress management, nature time, the lectures. The single most important thing that helped people was changing their perception of what they could and couldn't do, and in effect, opening themselves up to a greater potential of self. The results are absolutely spectacular. I mean, beyond anything any of us, including the scientists who oversaw the study, expected. We are now in the process of writing it up. When it's all finished, I'll make a presentation here, so you all get the benefit of the whole study. But in any case, going back 14 years, there's one person who stood out. And he stood out because the other people had so many physical problems, but they were all based upon psychological issues, like drug addiction, alcoholism, abuse as a child, neglect from parents, etc. And that manifested in different disorders. But one guy seemed to have everything wrong. I mean, everything you could think of. In fact, he even told me before he started that he didn't know if he'd even be able to make the trip, because his surgeon said, you must have surgery, heart surgery, or you'll die. The trouble is, at your weight and age, there's a high probability you will die from the surgery. And that got him to pay attention. Then he was in enough pain. And that's when he said, can I be in this? And I said, of course you can. But how many of these things have you tried over your life? He said, oh, everything. What's worked? Nothing. So why not? He said, I would do things and I'd stop doing it. And then an issue would come up in my life and something would happen and a relationship would end and I'd get depressed and I'd start overeating. So that's all I'm going to tell you. But last night I found the video that I didn't realize I had of him through his whole journey, every step of it, at home with his sisters, his friends, him in his neighborhood in Brooklyn, him on PBS in Detroit with me. And what a story. So if you want something that'll inspire you, something that'll motivate you, you think you got problems, you have no problems, none compared to what this guy had. Every major disease, every killer, he had seven killer diseases. And then he had none. And was healthy and happy. But the happiness is what created the health. I'll show you that video clip hopefully tomorrow or the day after, as soon as he gets back to New York. So that's why exercise is important, and that's why you got to build it up gradually and then keep it up. Now, maybe the first time you go out to exercise, you can exercise 10 minutes. That's fine. So for the next week, just do 10 minutes. Then see if you can go to 12 minutes. So gradually build it up to where you're doing good aerobic and good resistance. From the University of Athens in Greece, chamomile tea is tied to lower thyroid cancer risk. So if you consume a glass of chamomile tea each day, that's linked with a lower risk of thyroid cancer in this study. That's good. And then we have another study, University of Notre Dame. Taking time to commune with nature increases feelings of connection to nature. And we've just, well, depending upon where we live, but just getting out and, you know, grounding yourself with nature makes a big deal. So something to think about. This is published in Ecopsychology, and it just showed that increasing mindfulness towards the environment would make a big difference in appreciating that environment. I just think we need to get out of our cities and take a look at the wonderful and beautiful world we're a part of, and then appreciate it. Augusta University and Ohio State University, two studies, found that whole body vibrations can reduce inflammation in patients with type 2 diabetes. Now, we have a diabetes epidemic in the United States, but they found that a whole body vibration has potential benefits on the bacterial communities in our gut, resulting in reducing inflammation throughout the body. And the vibrations also led to enhanced glucose metabolism. They published in the peer-reviewed journal of the International Journal of Molecular Science suggested whole body vibration can be utilized as a safe therapeutic option for treating high blood sugar and diabetes-related inflammation. But you think, okay, what is whole body vibration? Well, whole body vibration is a form of therapeutic exercise used to improve overall health in people of all ages. It's often done with the help of a machine designed to produce vibrations at programmed frequencies as the person sits or stands on it. As the machine vibrates, it sends small waves of energy throughout the entire body, and these small energy waves force muscles to relax and contract a couple of times per second. And I believe that whole body vibration therapy is very good. It can reduce lower back pain and protect against bone loss and improves overall strength and balance. And I believe that long ago they should have been using these with magnets in hospitals for people who have ulcers so that they don't end up with gangrene because of lack of movement of the legs. This would move the whole body. And then if you have magnets, like a magnetic mattress on the bed, and you have vibration of the whole mattress, so your muscles are contracting, firing, that's good. That increases circulation. So it's all good. And by the way, it's one of the best things you can do to help people with sarcopenia, which is a slow and progressive form of muscle loss. So, and it can also help with osteoporosis, and it can increase muscle strength and help with muscle soreness. This was published in Frontiers in Neurology. And also, there was an interesting study about the possible remedy for pandemic stress. Guess what? Iowa State University and Trinity College Dublin said exercise, meaning people who stayed physically active while sheltering were less depressed and more mentally resilient than those who activity, you know, levels were low. So that one more reason to get out and exercise. Take walks, bike. You can do so in a safe way. All right? So just something simple, something we should do, something easy. Well, we've been told that take your antidepressants if you're depressed. Take your anti-anxiety if you have anxiety, because it's really not talk therapy. It's going to help you. It's not dealing with your life issues. It's going to help you. It's a brain chemical imbalance. Well, first of all, there's never been a study of any kind proving that there is this brain chemical imbalance. And secondly, the Nordic Cochrane Center in Denmark said in a recent study, a team of researchers from the Nordic Cochrane Center, that the effectiveness of antidepressants as a treatment for depression, quote, lacks conclusive evidence. So do antidepressants really work? The answer is no. Now you're going up against a multi-billion dollar a year industry, and they're not going to allow that. So they looked at all the studies. They compared the studies to alternative treatment. They observed the systematic distortions of results in about 79% of the studies they analyzed. In these studies, positive effects of antidepressants were emphasized, but the actual side effects had glaring inconsistencies, and they saw repeatedly failures in double-blind experiments where the participants were able to tell whether a placebo or antidepressant was administered due to the presence of side effects. So when they honestly looked at everything, they said, wow, doesn't work. Okay, good. I'm glad at least to know the truth there. So there are good ways of dealing with depression and with anxiety, and we'll give you more on that coming up. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly to a report of a man who spent 37 years of his life in prison for rape. But he didn't rape anyone, and the system failed him, and he's now free because of the Innocence Project, a great group, by the way. I commend them. I have such respect for them. And I want you to hear what he has to say. It's a remarkable story. Back in a moment.
My name is Archie Williams.
Tuesday night, Archie Williams took the stage on NBC's America's Got Talent and made an impression no one will soon forget.
Don't let the sun go down on me.
A show-stopping moment that he never could have imagined just last year. On March 21st, 2019, Archie Williams was released from Angola Prison in Louisiana, 37 years after being falsely accused and convicted of rape.
Good and sweet moment right now.
Archie was just 22 in 1983 when he was arrested and stood trial for the 1982 rape and stabbing of a white woman in her Baton Rouge home. Despite multiple alibis, fingerprints that didn't match his, and eyewitnesses saying Archie wasn't the guy, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole.
Being innocent is a thing where you never give up on yourself.
That kept Archie going, and in 1995, after having already served 12 years, he wrote to the Innocence Project. By the grace of God, I'm still holding on, hoping and praying someone will answer my letter.
His case was screaming out that he was innocent.
It took a new judge in 2019 to order the fingerprint test. Within 8 hours, they'd found the real rapist, and within a week, Archie was free.
What does freedom feel like, Archie?
I don't think you can explain it. The fullness of freedom.
For Archie, this is what freedom sounds like.
Found your voice.
Singing was my sport.
That sport led him to an unusual place.
That's a tragedy. But Archie represents probably 1/1,000th of 1% of all the people of color in our country's history who have been identified as less than human, who have not been given the opportunity to have the same ability, the same opportunity, the same skill sets that other people have had. I've said many times the reason our streets are empty on issues that we should all be out there protesting, like how we've allowed 27 million Americans to lose their homes under a Bush and Obama, how our prisons were full of people for nonviolent crimes, including the use of marijuana, the search and seizures that humiliated people, but never, as I've said, down on Wall Street, did you ever see the police, New York police, stopping and searching and asking people to empty their pockets or their bags, nor in any of the upper-scale environments. You don't see stop and searches in front of the billionaire's building on Park Avenue. Now for a commentary. I will not be able to get it all to you, but I will give enough. Because just like they tell us to roll up our sleeves, we got a new vaccine, and there will be that little punitive figure, Anthony Fauci, saying, you need to get this. The president, as mindless as he is, will say, of course, everybody's got to get it. Bill Gates will be there with all of his clapping clowns saying, get your vaccine. All the media will say it. No, don't. Don't volunteer to put yourself into harm's way, and that's exactly what you would do. And who's behind all this? Merck. I'm going to share you now actual scholarship on Merck's history of crimes and misdemeanors. It is posted in its entirety on PRN.fm. So if I ask you which private corporation has likely been responsible for the deaths of more innocent people than any terrorist organization or military regime change in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and elsewhere, for us the answer is evident. Merck and Company. Iatrogenic medicine or medical error is now the third leading cause of death in the United States after cardiovascular disease and cancer. The majority of these deaths are caused by FDA-approved drugs, adverse effects, and from patients taking multiple medications without thorough clinical research to determine the safety of their synergistic effects. Consequently, our health agency's oversight and monitoring of drugs on the market is dismal. One of the worst corporate deals the U.S. government may have ever made in modern history was to acquire the American subsidiary of the German pharmaceutical firm Merck and Company during the First World War. Later, in 1953, Merck acquired a competitive drug maker, Sharp & Dohme, thereby establishing itself as America's largest drug developer and manufacturer. Since then, this corporate Medusa has ensnared 13 other drug firms, including Schering Plough, which it acquired for $41 billion. The two pharmaceutical giants earned $47 billion in 1 year in combined sales at the time of the merger in 2009. Merck's legacy of lawsuits for crimes was observed back in the 1970s. In 1975, it was busted by the Securities and Exchange Commission for illegal payments to foreign government officials from approximately 36 nations. The scam was orchestrated through personal bank accounts with the sole purpose of advancing drug approvals through foreign nations' regulatory medical agencies. One of the largest scandals in recent medical history was the company's anti-inflammatory drug Vioxx, which resulted in fines above $4.8 billion for causing over a minimum 60,000 deaths from heart attacks and strokes and over 120,000 serious medical injuries. At its height, Vioxx was earning over $2 billion in revenue annually, and it is estimated that 25 million patients were prescribed the medication. Were all those 25 million patients followed in a tracking system to see whether or not they would later end up with a stroke or a heart attack? No. The securities class action suit against the company alone reached $1 billion, placing it in the top 15 security lawsuits in U.S. corporate history. The primary charge was Merck's intentional withholding of scientific data about the drug's adverse cardiovascular side effects. Years after the settlement, the publisher of a magazine, major magazine, undertook his own investigation to validate Vioxx's death toll. Analyzing the drug's adverse effects over a longer period of time, this man named Muntz, estimated that Merck may have been responsible for nearly 500,000 premature deaths in elderly patients. The drug's primary target group. That is roughly the same number of total civilian military and terrorist deaths from the United States military escapades in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan combined. Merck's settlement of 47,000 pending lawsuits for personal injuries and 265 class action suits was a small pittance for the harm Vioxx left in its wake. Merck executives were never prosecuted for willingly concealing the drug's dangers in order to assure FDA approval. In Australia, Merck's efforts to increase Vioxx's profits employed other forms of malfeasance. The Australian government launched a class action suit against the drug maker on charges that employees allegedly schemed a fake scientific paper that was ghostwritten for a medical journal in order to put Vioxx into a positive light. Testimonials during the trial stated data was completely based upon, quote, wishful thinking, end quote. Merck also founded the peer-reviewed journal Australian Journal for Bone and Joint Medicine. The journal was a fraud. It was not properly peer-reviewed, and its primary purpose was to promote Vioxx on the Australian continent. Moreover, the class action lawsuit contained Merck emails accessed by Australian officials. The company's internal communications allegedly ordered select employees to, quote, draft up a hit list of physicians who were critical of Vioxx. According to the documents, these physicians were targeted to, quote, neutralize or, quote, discredit them. Some included Dr. James Fries at Stanford University's medical school, where clinical investigators who happened to speak out about the drug's shortcomings. One email said, quote, we may need to seek them out and destroy them where they live, end quote. Mind you, this is the same Merck now seeking to have a fast-track coronavirus vaccine. with the full support of the White House, CDC, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Fauci, etc. Efforts to target critics for harassment is not limited to Merck. Earlier, Monsanto earned a similar reputation. Monsanto's parent company, Bayer, had to release a public apology last week for the discovery of a Monsanto hit list of 200 French journalists and politicians who opposed glyphosate in its GMO crops. It has acted similarly in other countries, including the U.S., according to veteran journalist Kerry Gillum. The list originated from the multinational public relations firm Fleischmann Hillard. Merck has also employed Fleischmann Hillard, as well as Monsanto's other notorious PR firm, Ketchum. One of Merck's executive directors, Ian McConnell, earlier served as a vice president of Fleischmann. The PR firm's senior advisor on healthcare, Dr. Lucas Pfister, was at Merck for 25 years in its government affairs unit. Merck's revolving door is not limited to our federal health agencies, but also fully infiltrates some of the world's most shadowy international PR firms that specialize in whitewashing the public images of executive elites and corporations, and in the case of the PR firm Burst and Marsteller, even dictators. Following the Vioxx case, Merck had hired Burst and Marsteller to clean up its public image. MSNBC reported back in 2009, quote, "When evil needs public relations, evil has Burst and Marsteller on speed dial." But Merck's troubles with the dangers of its products, falsified data about drugs' efficacy and safety, and exaggeration of medical claims go back 60 years. In the 1960s, the FDA discovered the drug maker's arthritis medication, Indocin, had not been properly tested for efficacy, and its adverse effects were being completely ignored. In the 1970s, Merck's drug diethylstilbestrol, or DES, prescribed for the prevention of miscarriages, caused a huge amount of vaginal cancer cases and other gynecological disorders. Merck had all along known that DES was carcinogenic based upon its own animal clinical trials, but it hid it. In 2007, its cholesterol drug, Zytia, was shown to increase liver disease. Again, Merck had known about the drug's liver risk, but withheld the clinical trial's damning results. It would also appear that Merck has managed to hijack U.S. courts as well. This includes an earlier 2019 ruling by Trump's corporate-friendly U.S. Supreme Court to side with the drug maker and squash hundreds of lawsuits for failing to issue warnings that its osteoporosis drug, Fosamax, may contribute to debilitating bone breaks. A federal court in California found that Merck committed perjury by lying in a patent infringement case against Gilead Sciences over the latter's blockbuster hepatitis C drug, Sovaldi. The judge ruled that Merck carried out, quote, a systematic and outrageous deception in conjunction with unethical business practices and litigation misconduct, end quote. It turned out that Merck's patent claims were a sham and orchestrated by its legal division. Besides pushing through the FDA dangerous medications onto the market, the company has also found itself in the courtroom on many occasions for allegedly price-fixing, routinely defrauding and overbilling states' Medicare and Medicaid programs, and violating the anti-kickback statute. In 2006, the IRS went after Merck for owing almost $2 billion in back taxes. According to the Wall Street Journal, Merck partnered with a British bank to create an offshore subsidiary in tax-friendly Bermuda to divert taxable revenue on its best-selling cholesterol drugs, Zocor and Mevacor, through a patent scheme. The company ran the operation for 10 years before the FDA uncovered the racket. Merck is America's leading vaccine maker. Despite public perception and the ruse that vaccines are somehow safer, more effective than pharmaceutical drugs in general, it is the same industry, the same corporate culture, the same manufacturers for both the vaccines and the drugs. Currently, Merck markets vaccines for hemophilus B, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, individually and in combination, human papillomavirus, there's the deadly Gardasil, measles, mumps, and rubella, the MMR vaccine, pneumococcal, rotavirus, varicella, which is chickenpox, zoster virus for shingles, and more recently has jumped into the coronavirus vaccine race. In 2010, Merck obtained exclusive rights to Mass Biologics' vaccine portfolio. The consequence is that Merck's adult vaccine portfolio expanded to include nine of the 10 vaccines on the CDC's adult immunization schedule. The company now holds almost a full monopoly on the government's vaccines. On its website, the FDA assures the public that, quote, vaccines, as well as all other products regulated by the FDA, undergo a rigorous review of laboratory and clinical data to ensure the safety, efficacy, purity, and potency of these products, end quote. However, except for Gardasil, not a single one of Merck's vaccines has ever been tested in a scientifically viable, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. In each case, the placebo in the control group was not inert, such as the use of sterile saline. That would make it legitimate, but they didn't use it. Rather, Merck only tested the vaccine with a viral component against a faux placebo containing the same ingredients, including aluminum, but minus a virus, known as a carrier solution. The standard scientific protocol does not designate it has a proper placebo for measuring or the disease risk. And in the case of Gardasil, the trial was statistical trickery because it masked Gardasil's adverse effects. Therefore, the FDA's claim is patently false. Zero of Merck's vaccines have ever undergone, quote, a rigorous review prior to regulatory approval. Keep that in mind, because what's going to be coming, no matter who gives it to you, will be an incompletely tested vaccine for coronavirus. The risk is going to be on you. All the damage will be yours, your children. And they won't have to pay a penny if they're wrong. Although not completely innocent from internal unfairness and conflicts of interest, the Cochrane database collaboration arguably remains the most reliable resource for analysis of drugs and vaccines and medical devices in the evidence-based medical establishment. In its 2016 analysis of Merck's human papillomavirus, Gardasil, the investigators were so alarmed they filed a complaint against the European Medical Agency for failing to adequately assess the vaccine's neurological harms. As we have recently witnessed with Monsanto's Roundup and Bayer settlement of $10 billion, that's what was actually last week, to cover 80,000 lawsuits, Gardasil may very well become the company's Achilles heel. The Gardasil scandal may very well begin to topple the vaccine regimen and raise the public's already increasing awareness and distrust in the official mantra that vaccines are safe and effective. The development, scientific rationale, fraudulent clinical trials and data reporting and inside negotiations with federal health officials to market the vaccine to preteen and teen girls and boys is a story completely ridiculed with misconduct. Today, it is Merck's third largest revenue-generating drug after its cancer drug, Keytruda, and diabetic drug Januvia, which earned $3.1 billion in 2018. Its MMR vaccine is fifth, earning $1.8 billion. Gardasil's success has nothing to do with the prevention of an urgent national health need. Instead, it was more likely a business strategy through Merck's influence over our nation's regulatory agencies and state politicians whose election campaigns it funds. In fact, finally, on just this today, in 2018, a French oncologist, Dr. Gerard Delphine, stumbled upon a correction between the increase in cervical cancer rates with the rising rates of Gardasil vaccination. He also compared France, which was deliberating on whether to mandate human papillomavirus vaccination, with the countries that relied upon pap smears as a preventative measure against cervical cancer. He observed that in all countries that prioritized pap smears, cervical cancer rates were decreasing, whereas in all countries with higher human papillomavirus vaccination compliance, the rates increased. In his letter to the French government, in defiance of Merck's lobbying efforts, he wrote, quote, a compulsory health measure should not be based on faith in vaccination or hidden conflicts of interest, but on proven facts verifiable by every citizen. However, the facts established by the official records of cancer registries show that the human papillomavirus vaccination does not protect against invasive cancer of the cervix, but seems rather to maintain its frequency at a high level and sometimes even increasing it end quote. An article published in the French journal AgriVox noted that other national health ministries are coming around to acknowledge that Gardasil is an extremely unsafe vaccine. Japan, Austria, and Denmark no longer promote it due to its trail of injuries with fatal consequences. Public demonstrations against Merck's Gardasil have occurred in Japan, Colombia, and Ireland. None in the United States, and the media has not presented any of these demonstrations in other countries. Yet none of these efforts to warn the public about Gardasil's risks have reached the American general media. Hopefully this may change. Medical researchers at the University of South Alabama presented their paper at the Society of Gynecological Oncology's annual conference. There's a great disparity between human papillomavirus vaccine compliance across Alabama counties, which range anywhere from 33% taking the vaccine up to 66%. Yet the epidemiological data suggests there is no evidence that Gardasil lowered cancer rates in counties with higher vaccine uptake. Moreover, there is zero chance of preteens and teens getting cervical cancer. The average age for the onset of the cancer is 50 years. Nor has the vaccine been on the market long enough to determine whether it protects a woman when she reaches even close to that age. Its product insert for physicians states the vaccine, quote, may not result in protection in all vaccine recipients, and, quote, it has not been demonstrated to prevent human papillomavirus-related CIN 2/3, meaning abnormal precancer cervical cells, or worse in women older than 26 years of age, end quote. In lay language, it means there is no scientific rationale for states to mandate the human papilloma vaccine for school children, let alone even vaccinating them in the first place. In addition, the federal agencies and Merck's market of the vaccine under a false pretext that human papillomavirus infection is the leading cause of cervical cancer correctly. Only a third of cervical cancer cases are caused by the virus. Again, they're wrong. More relevant today is Robert Kennedy Jr. is currently taking steps to sue Merck over the Gardasil deception. Merck's first effort to have the class action suit dismissed was overturned by the court. Kennedy's in-depth investigations through his Children's Health Defense Organization has uncovered evidence that the vaccine increases birth defects in children conceived of HPV-vaccinated moms. Miscarriages have increased 2,000% above normal, and girls are experiencing serious reproductive complications, including infertility, at approximately tenfold above the normal rate. During an interview on the Progressive Radio Network, he noted that there was a 10 times greater risk of dying from cervical cancer among Gardasil trial participants compared to the general public. There is a tenfold increase for ovarian failure. A 1 in 37 girls who receive the vaccine will experience an autoimmune disease after 6 months of receiving the series of injections. When we consider that 1 in 37,000 women have a chance of dying from cervical cancer, and 1 in 37 girls will end up with an autoimmune disease within 6 months, you think, my goodness, why in the world would you suggest any girl take it? The odds are astronomically against the girls. 1 in 37 to get sick, 1 in 37,000 has a chance of dying from cervical cancer later in life. It puts the human papillomavirus vaccines in a completely different light. Sadly, across the nation, politicians from both sides of the aisle and state legislatures, notably Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York, are seemingly doing Merck's bidding to mandate Gardasil for all girls and boys upon entering school. Based upon Robert Kennedy Jr.'s research and documents received from the Freedom of Information Act filings, during Merck's own Gardasil clinical trials, 2.3% of girls and women between the ages of 9 and through 26 developed a serious autoimmune disease and crippling neurological disorders within 7 months of vaccination. Among the 10,700 who received the actual vaccine, 245 or 2.3% had an autoimmune disorder. Among the 9,412 who received either an AAHS control, meaning the aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate adjuvant solution with other ingredients minus the human papillomavirus vectors, there was 218 or 2.3% life-threatening injuries. The most frequent adverse effects were arthritis and enteropathy, autoimmune thyroiditis, celiac disease, hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism, inflammatory bowel disease, psoriasis, Raynaud's phenomena, rheumatoid arthritis, and uveitis. In other words, it was the aluminum adjuvant responsible for this enormous suffering. Kennedy stated during the Progressive Radio Network broadcast that according to Merck's own statistics, girls are 100 times more likely to experience a serious adverse effect from the vaccine than to be protected from cervical cancer. In a 2012 article published in the Journal of Law and Medical Ethics, researchers at the University of British Columbia wrote that ever since Gardasil was approved in 2006, Merck has engaged in a, quote, overly aggressive marketing strategies and lobbying campaigns aimed at promoting Gardasil as a mandatory vaccine, end quote. One strategy Merck has employed is to take advantage of FDA loopholes to fast-track its drugs. In the case of its expanded Gardasil 9 for adults between the ages of 27 to 45, the company applied for fast-tracking 2 days after the Journal of Toxicological and Environmental Health published a study that the human papillomavirus vaccine, their vaccine, was lowering the probability of pregnancy for women in their 20s. Unfortunately, the media was indiscriminately colluded with Merck. Drug companies, according to Kennedy, pay $4.5 billion to the major media networks and publications to promote their drugs, and none of the media outlets are willing to sacrifice their profits for advertising drugs on moral and ethical grounds. Another scandal erupted within Merck's vaccine business in 2010. After two whistleblowers gave testimony that the mumps component in its measles, mumps, rubella vaccine was based on fraudulent data about its efficacy, and the companies knowingly proceeded in order to corner the mumps vaccine market. Merck had been defrauding the U.S. government with purchases, which purchases the MMR vaccine, for a decade. The government and two Merck whistleblowers, biologist Stephen Crawling and Dr. Joan Wachowski, filed a lawsuit against Merck for being in violation of the False Claims Act. According to charges, Merck, quote, had falsified its mumps vaccine test results to hit an efficacy rate of 95%. The company achieved this by adding, quote, animal antibodies to a blood sample to give the impression of increased antibodies, end quote. In other words, these were not human antibodies. These were animal antibodies. This would certainly explain why mumps outbreaks in summer camps and on college campuses are found to occur among those who have been fully vaccinated. Merck has gained enormous political and social influence over the national perception about vaccines. For example, is Merck's behind-the-scenes aggression against the film Vaxxed, when the documentary film was officially selected to screen during the 2016 Tribeca Film Festival in Manhattan? We discovered in an earlier report that Merck left its fingerprints on the film's removal and censorship. The Alfred Sloan Foundation is the festival's largest sponsor. They put up with the money for the Tribeca Film Festival. Pro-vaccine advocate Bill Gates also is a notable contributor. Well, one of the leading persons on the foundation's board of trustees was Dr. Peter Kim. Kim happens to be the former president of Merck's Research Laboratories, who was directly responsible for launching Gardasil and Merck's other vaccines for the zoster virus and rotavirus. The film presents a harsh indictment against Dr. Julie Gerberding, the former head of the CDC who allegedly coordinated the cover-up of data that confirmed thimerosal's role in the onset of autism. After managing the agency's operations for quite a period of time, in effect, that was what she was doing. She was overseeing thimerosal's safety. Gerberding accepted then her reward from the pharmaceutical industry by becoming the head of Merck's vaccine division. In addition, according to the whistleblowing of a senior CDC scientist, Dr. William Thompson, Gerberding was allegedly responsible for destroying the CDC's research that showed African-American boys were at a susceptibility for a higher risk of becoming autistic after taking Merck's MMR vaccine. Almost 324% more likely to become autistic. Unfortunately, Dr. Thompson, who was present during the order to shred documents, save copies, which he subsequently turned over to Congressman Bill Posey of Florida and an independent biologist, Professor Brian Hooker. Since then, Congress and all of its committees have failed to hold any hearings for anyone at the CDC, including Dr. Thompson. That's the power of the pharmaceutical industry. All told, these examples of Merck's culture of greed, deception, political maneuvering, and aggression has collectively injured countless people. Merck is a global corporation. Its products, like Monsanto's glyphosate, are marketed globally. To better understand Merck, the company should be perceived foremost as a cash cow for Wall Street. Its prime directive is selling drugs. Its history of misdemeanors and crimes should indicate the company holds little integrity, in our opinion, in its commitment to prevent and treat disease. The full extent of the casualties from Merck's drugs and vaccines may never be properly calculated. For firms such as Merck and Monsanto, in our opinion, injuries and deaths are the necessary collateral damage of getting poorly tested products on the market and as fast as possible. Our thoughts, a black box should be slapped on Merck's logo. What is important at this moment is that many corporations are fast-tracking without sufficient long-term animal and human clinical trials. Merck is now aggressively making efforts to beat out its competition with the COVID-19 vaccine. Do we really want to trust such a company with this reputation with a COVID vaccine? Therefore, we recommend people to support the efforts of Robert Kennedy and the Children's Health Defense in its lawsuit against Merck's Gardasil. A victory may well weaken the entire edifice of vaccine pseudoscience, and the public will realize that for decades it has been little more than a house of cards. I'm Gary Knoll. Please remember that right now the New York State Bar Association has sent to the legislative body in New York State their strong suggestions to make the COVID-19 vaccine mandatory for everyone in New York State, with no exceptions, no religious or any philosophical exemptions. So just imagine what it would be like when you're told that you must be vaccinated. And if you won't do it voluntarily, then what measures will the state take to quarantine you and or to forcibly take you to a place where you'll be vaccinated? And yet, many of us have believed that we have freedom of choice over our bodies. Not now. Not after what we're seeing happening. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.